everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dadcast. I am JP. That guy is Nick Martin. Nick, how are you?
I'm all right, man.
How are you? Doing okay? I mean, let's check in. We haven't recorded a podcast in about a week and a half. And how's the health? How are we feeling? What's going on? Any news to share?
Yeah, so I went to a neurologist yesterday and got some scary news, but we have a game plan, so that's good. They're checking me for aneurysm. Basically, the neurologist was upset that they didn't check me in the initial scans to if I had an aneurysm. And he's like, 90% sure you had an aneurysm and you're probably going to have another one. So, so tomorrow I go in for a lumbar puncture to also rule out spinal meningitis. Thanks to Brian's lady, Nicole, for bringing all that stuff up and finally push the doctors to get those tests done. So I'm going in tomorrow for that. And then shortly after that, I'll go in for another MRI. And basically I'm taking a lot more time off of work. The last 4 days I haven't really been able to get out of bed. So it's been a little weird, a little rough.
Man, well, you know, your whole team is rooting for you, brother. And we're glad you're here with us doing all right. If there's any issues or you got to go, that's cool. Just, you know, disappear. You know, okay. I always got this.
Cool.
Today on, and what, I'm sorry, that's just a sad way to start this thing. Let's turn it around real quick. Today on Dadcast, we've got a couple of guests. One, you know, one is a first timer on Dadcast. I'm going to introduce him first. Please welcome formerly of the band Saliva, former frontman, and just an amazing all around guy. I've heard a whole bunch of stories from our friend. Please welcome to Dadcast, Mr. Josie Scott. Hello, sir. How are you?
What's going on? How are you guys doing, man? I'm so glad to be here with you.
Oh, we are stoked to have you. As I mentioned off the air, your hat is the best hat I've seen in the history of hats. As you can see, I'm a Raider fan. So
that's the Raider hat I can get behind. I can wear that.
I
would be okay with that.
I'm going to get you one then. I'm going to dial that in. And also, I know
you're probably going to be in Vegas in about a week. So
probably. Also on the show, welcome back our friend, our compadre, our man in the podcast world, the host of Heroes Journey podcast and the front man of the band Elvis Monroe. You know him, you love him, Mr. Brian Hopkins. What's up, bud?
Well, it's an introduction, man. Thanks. I'm out. That's
where I'll talk. See ya. As you know, Brian is a frequent co-host slash guest on the show. I will tell you right up front, Brian, it is okay to interject at any point in time and talk as much as you'd like on the show. Don't feel bad, man. It's all good. Okay. The least amount that I got to do, the better, right? You got to make up for Nick over there. Josie, so you let me tell you a little bit about Dadcast here, if you weren't aware. The premise of the show, but it's not centered and focused on, but generally we like to talk about the journey that is dad in fatherhood, our path, your path, the before, the after, the during, everything in between, dad. And that's what we're going to, you know, we're going to talk about here and see how it's going for you. And that path is, with that being said, the very first question, a rite of passage right here on Dadcast is, are you a dad?
I am. I'm six times over.
Wow. That is impressive. That is keeping up with Nick.
That's right.
Nick has 87 kids.
That I know about.
Yeah. Well, let's run them down, man. Let's talk. How many? So of the six kids, how many boys, how many girls, names, ages, all that good stuff?
I have a Brady Bunch. I have three boys and three girls. I had a son with my high school sweetheart back in 1991. Cody, is 29 years old, and I have two stepchildren with, my wife, Kendra, but I feel like they're mine because I've raised them since, 2003. And they are, Brittany, who is 26 years old, and Dylan, who's my guitar player in my solo band, in the Josie Scott band, and he is 24. And then I have three children with Kendra, a 16-year-old son named Justice, a 11-year-old daughter named Jordan, who is a rapper called Lil Bridge.
I love it.
And a 7-year-old daughter. Oh, she's a future supermodel, and it just makes me want to kill her first boyfriend.
And we're way, way far removed from that possible date.
Yeah.
And,
right.
Amen. I know
she's. You can already tell. You know when they're little, you can already tell they're gonna look like their mother. And Lil Bridge looks more like me. She's gorgeous, don't get me wrong, but the other one looks just like her mama, and I'm just kind of upset about it. I'm just like, damn it.
I know exactly.
She's gonna be trouble.
I know how you feel, man. And to track back on that whole step kid thing, it's funny. Mm-hmm. We just talked with Matthew and Gunnar Nelson. Gunnar, he says he actually gets offended if you refer to him as stepdad. He is adamant he is dad. And, you know, you kind of touched on that earlier. You know, you are dad, man. There's no, you don't need to put the stepdad in there. That's few and far between. Yeah. As far as the girl is concerned and the supermodel thing, let me tell you what, my non-blood daughter, you know, here I go. It's stepdaughter, but she's my daughter. She's going to be 18 in December, 5'10 and a half, about 105 pounds, looks just like her mother, who was a Calvin Klein model back in the day. God help me. I'm going through it. And I pray for you, sir, because
my heart's already breaking for you, brother.
Bro, and it's not just that. It's just, you know, the mentality and the attitude, you know, you've been through it already. You know, she's still in the chalk, right in the middle of, I know everything, you know nothing, and there's nothing possible in the history of your life or mom's life that you could ever have gone through that I go through, which is that big, big struggle. Right, Nick? I mean.
Exactly. Yeah. Dude, so last weekend, I met my 18-year-old daughter's first boyfriend for the first time, right?
Whoa.
And Yeah. So she hasn't had a boyfriend. She moves back in with her mom and decides
Emma.
To start.
We're talking about Emma?
Talking about Emma.
Okay.
Yeah. She's dating a really nice Mormon boy. All right.
Okay.
Like, so my cousin knows him. He's a very nice boy, has a nice family. So I go over and she's like, Dad, I want you to meet him. I'm like, all right. And I notice Emma has a big bruise on her leg. So backstory, she was out on a boat with his family the day before. And she fell off the boat and he tried to help her get back up and just nailed her leg on the boat coming back up. So I'm like, dude, you're already beating her. What the hell is your problem? So this poor kid is like almost in tears. He's like, I know, dude, I'm just fucking with you. It's okay. Calm down.
Well,
just
Mormon,
whatever you do to my daughter, I'll do to you. So
be careful with that statement, Nick.
I realized that after
she is an adult, and I don't want to put two and two together and paint a picture for you, but careful with your words, man.
I painted the picture later. I was like, damn it.
So your littlest supermodel there, Josie, you said she's 7. I have a 9-year-old who is also, I think, going to be quite the looker when she gets a little bit older. And she's also, and Brian, Mr. Hopkins, can attest to it, I love sharing the story, is starting to become very interested in singing and songwriting. And she actually, while I was in Vegas last week, she did it in the span of like 30 minutes. From the time I got on the airplane and landed, she had it finished. She wrote half of a song, sang it, produced it, and put it behind video. And it was ready for me when I landed. And, you know, it's not the greatest thing. Well, to me it is. It's the greatest absolute thing that's ever happened in the history of music. But, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
I shared it with Brian and it was really good. And she's 9 years old. So I'm really looking forward to that possible of, you know, her just really grabbing onto that and running with it. Cause I'd rather her be a singer songwriter and, you know, make music than walk down a runway. Just me.
Well, right. Whatever they choose to do, man.
But I will support it in whatever it ends up being. But yeah, man, oof, crazy this thing being dad is. Brian Hopkins, man, you're so quiet today. You're freaking me out a little bit.
I'm listening. This is great. this is.
I know. I'm like, amazing. What the hell is happening?
Why, Josie? You guys? So Josie, you I happened to come across Brian's, I follow him and look at all his social media, and I saw the interview you did with him for Rock Rage Radio, free plug. And that's where you two met for the first time. Is that?
Yeah. But it was like meeting an old friend.
Right. That's what I'm hearing.
Absolutely was, man. Total, like we'd known each other for years. Like, yep. We had such an instantaneous emotional connection. Like two old. So I hate to use that word, old.
Yeah,
soul,
it's true. Man, it's the best way to put crazy. It. I agree. It was really wild. It was like we just sat down and caught up, but that you were the knowledge that you were, you know, you were sharing with me why you were doing what you're doing now and what it is that you're doing. And it caught me off guard. And, you know, had I did my research on you, it was most likely public knowledge, you know, because people had asked me, oh, wow, you interviewed Josie Scott. Did you happen to talk about? And I went, we did, but it caught me off guard. And the thing that I'm alluding here is we talked about why you got into music, and please share that, or why you started back up with music now and your project. And it caught me off guard, man. It threw me. It was emotional.
Yeah. The thing was when, I was waiting on the girls to get a little older. Justice is already 16, so he's his own man, and he's kind of on autopilot now. But I was waiting on the girls to get a little older, and I was still torn, you know, should I, shouldn't I? And the music has never died inside of me. I call it the radio in my head has always continued to write songs and manufacture these moments out of life, especially being in love with three different women, you know, being in love with my wife and being in love with these two little girls. Life just puts songs in my head all the time. So over the past 10 years, I've written probably two albums worth of material, but just didn't know when to pull the trigger on getting back out there. And when this situation happened with Cody, it was just so fast and so aggressive. Because my son got diagnosed and was dead 12 days later. He was dead in 12 days.
Okay. And I'm going to back you up here. Just so you are all aware, who are listening and watching this show, his son, Cody, who is 29 years old, last year contracted COVID. Mm-hmm. And then passed away. So
yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah. No, that's fine. He contracted it on the 11th and he was dead by the 22nd. And went into the hospital. They force fed him oxygen. I was, you know, as a father, you want to run to them. He was actually trying to come and visit us. And I was telling Brian when he first got sick, I said, hey, just come on to Oklahoma from Memphis. And I said, we'll put you in the back bedroom. We'll bring you chicken soup and we'll take care of you, you know, and if we all get it, we all get it. Hell, you know, we'll deal with that later, yeah. But I want to take care of you. And he said, no, he said, Dad, my girlfriend's already got it. He said, I'm just going to stay here with my girlfriend. And I couldn't convince him to come to Oklahoma. And they wouldn't let me come there because they wouldn't allow me to come into the hospital. And I think I'll regret that part for the rest of my life, is not just going freaking Rambo on them.
Yeah.
And just breaking the freaking door down and coming in there with my baby. I think I'll regret that for the rest of my life. But so they forced fed him oxygen. They tried to get his, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, try not to, man. Like he knows that you wanted to be there. You already reached out to him. You already said, we'll take care of you. He knows that about you. He knows that you would have ran through that door. And if he had it that bad, there's no way. If he all of a sudden survived it and then you got sick and you weren't here, I guarantee you, like he's looking at you saying, Dad, I know you want to be in that room. You don't have to carry that regret around with you at all. At all, dude. You don't.
Thank you, brother.
I'm serious. You do not have to carry that guilt at all.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So he, they tried to do the CPAP mask and force feed him oxygen, and his oxygen wasn't coming above 85, and they were trying all these different things, and he was a big guy. He was a big guy like me. And nothing was helping, and on the 11th, on the 10th, going into the 11th day, they tried some different techniques to where he looked like he was getting better. They said he was testing negative for COVID. And so we had a little bit of hope, and we were going to my stepdaughter's wedding here in Tulsa at a Catholic church. And I didn't want to miss my daughter's wedding. And it looked like he was doing a little better. So we went into the wedding with hopeful hearts. You know what I mean? I was just thanking God. And I was like, it's going to be okay. Maybe there's a light at the end of this tunnel. You know what I mean? And so we went to the wedding. It was a beautiful Catholic service. And they did this. They wanted to do it in traditional Latin. And so they spoke Latin during the ceremony, and it was just so beautiful. And me and his mother, Kendra, were feeling on the up and up, about it. And we went to the reception, and I sat down, and I thought to myself, Catholics, the wine is being passed around. So I thought, I'm going to have a glass of wine, man. I'm going to chill and just have me a glass of wine and sort of calm my nerves a little bit, And I sat down with a cup of wine, and my phone just started going. And I answered my phone, and his girlfriend is screaming, man. And I can't make out what she's saying. And I hear them in the background calling, some kind of code or something. And I tried to get my wife, got on the phone and tried to talk to her. And I said, I'm coming to Memphis. So I went and jumped in my car, and doing 100 miles an hour down the highway, trying to head towards Memphis. And my wife called me about 20 minutes into the trip. And then my wife was screaming and not making any sense, and not screaming, but she was making that sound that only a mother can make. You know what I mean? That howl that can only come from an injured mother. I can't really explain it. And she said, you need to turn around. And I knew right then, man, I knew right then. I felt him leave my body, man. It's like, ever since he was born and I held him in my arms, he was my first baby, So, like, he was the first child I ever had that connection with. And as you guys know, being fathers, you know that feeling with your first child that you that you feel your heart click. You sort of go from being a jabroni who's out there, you know, just getting your craziness on, you know, and you're just a young man yourself. And then you hold something that you made, you know what I'm saying, that came from your body and came from her body. And you, and it looks you back in your eyes and your heart just clicks. And I felt that essence leave me, and I just started punching the roof of the car. And I don't know how in the world I ever turned around on that highway. And I don't know how I ever found my way back to that Catholic church, but I got back to the Catholic church, and the priest that did the wedding was coming out of the church at the time. And he saw me in the parking lot, and he just came up and grabbed me. And I just let out this scream, man. I can't describe it to you. And I just went to my knees. But what Brian's talking about, not to get all in detail about it, but, and take up all y'all's time, but, Brian, what Brian is talking about is, I had a lot of guilt and still have a lot of guilt, about the situation. And I was like, you know, I'm never, maybe this is my answer. I'm never going to do music again. I'm never going to be able to, how will I ever do music? Yeah. You know, how will I ever walk on stage again? How will I ever do these things again? You know? And I was telling Brian that, like three or four weeks into the just awful morning that me and my wife were going to, I had this dream. And in the dream, I was laying on the canvas of a boxing ring. And I used to play football. I played football for 5 years. So I know what the feeling of blood coming out of my nose and mouth is. I know what that feeling feels like. And I was just breathing real hard, and I was blowing. It felt like something was running out of my mouth and my nose. So I took the boxing glove on my hand, and I was rubbing my face like this and looking at the boxing glove, and it was blood. There was blood all over my hand. And I was like, man, I must have got knocked the fuck out by something or somebody. Right. I must have got kicked by a mule or something. Right. And I couldn't get up. As much as I tried, I couldn't get up. I couldn't get up. And I was trying to push myself up off the canvas, and I just couldn't. And I felt this presence come down in my ear, and it was Cody's voice. And he said, "Dad, you got to get up. You got to get up, Dad. Come on, Pops. Come on, Pops. You got to get up." And when he said Pops, I knew it was Cody, and I could feel his breath in my ear. And, you know, as fathers, you know, you smell your child. You can smell their breath. You can smell their hair. You can smell them. And I could smell that sweet smell of Cody's cologne and his breath in my ear saying, "Dad, you got to get up. You got to get up, Pops. Come on, Pops. Come on, you got to get up." And he was and I felt him pull, horse collar me like that. And he pulled me backwards. And when I turned, I was just forcing my head to turn and look at his face, and I woke up. But I knew when I woke up, and I was covered in sweat, and I woke my wife up immediately, and I told her about that dream. And I said, I was like, that's the answer.
There
that's
is.
My answer. Cody wants me to get up. He wants me to get up off the mat. He sees me knocked out, and he sees me down, and he wants me to get up. And that's him telling me everything's all right, and he wants me to get up off the mat. And from that moment on, I have put everything into getting up.
There were two things that I saw that day that you shared part of that story, and you went into depth on this one on that day. One, I'm going through something with my brother. Every day the phone rings, I get scared because my brother, he's dying. But if you ask my brother, he's living. And I said, "That's what you're doing. I want you to live your best life every day." But his name is Cody. as well. So we talked about that, but I watched you take the stage in front of thousands of people and command a stage for three songs when you got to walk out on stage with your old bandmates or two of your old bandmates and take the stage. And graciously, the singer gave you a great introduction and you walked out and you you helped build this. And it gives me the hair standing up in my arms because I got to watch and sing along and video the whole thing and loved every moment of it. And knowing that he's right there with you. I'm Native American Indian. I believe that you had a vision and that's what it was. And when you walked in that room with me, we were joking because you're bending over, grabbing my knee like we were old friends, you know, stretching out, getting ready to do the interview. And, you know, and I got to witness that. I got to witness you take that stage again. And that was a huge, special moment for us to be a part of. Everyone there, whether they knew what they were watching or not. Amazing. So you need to chase those moments and be out on that stage every day. And let that radio in your head just continue to speak to everybody and keep sharing this. Because the more we talk about Cody, the more he's not going to be forgotten. He's going to be loved and remembered and a part of everything that you do. So, right.
Yeah, along with what Brian was saying too. Like, just I watched the videos and I've seen you live a couple of times and you've played Medford, Oregon, I think twice back when you were still in Saliva, and just seeing your presence on stage at the Rock Ridge Fest, dude, I was like, holy shit. Like, there's like something came over you. It was incredible. So yeah,
we all know the answer to what came over him.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, yeah. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt this beautiful conversation. Pretty deep. This is the end of part one with Josie Scott. Want to check out part two? Make sure you comment, like, subscribe up the channel, hit that bell. So when you see part two drop here in just a few days, you won't miss a thing. We'll be right back and we'll see you soon on part two with Josie Scott.